Dash kind of stayed focused on, instead of becoming less useful, they're becoming more useful in that direction, focusing more on privacy, instant transactions, high degree of usability, scalability, so everyone could kind of do it and keep low fees.
Welcome back to Voices of Blockchain, the official podcast of Boston Blockchain Week 2025. Today, I'm chatting with Joel Valenzuela, aka the Desert Lynx, a crypto advocate from Dash.org who's all about turning digital assets into everyday cash. We're exploring Dash's focus on fast and private transactions, New Hampshire's underrated crypto roots, and how AI is supercharging blockchain development, and why crypto could replace your wallet for daily spends. Joel shares real-world tips for using crypto from everything from coffee to remittances. So check out Dash, Dash.org, and follow at DashPay on Twitter for weekly updates and weekly spaces. And you can grab your passes for the panels, pitches, and crypto vibes at BostonBlockchainWeek.com. Let's dive in with Joel Valenzuela. Joel, it's good to see you, man. Thanks for joining me. How's things over in New Hampshire?
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, thanks for having me. New Hampshire's good. I mean, when I moved from Phoenix about 12 years ago, I thought I'd be escaping the heat, but this is not one of those weeks.
Oh my God, you guys getting burned up out there too? I mean, we got a nice rainstorm hitting us right this second, but like it's been 90% humidity, 90 degrees. Ugh.
Yeah, mid-90s, one of those mid-90s days, which again, I was used to mid-110s days in Phoenix. But
oh, yeah, I know.
You know, the difference, maybe I've gotten soft in my old age.
See, I think that sometimes too, but you got to remember, like in Arizona, we all had air conditioning units. Like most places up in the north, they don't have that. You know, I mean, they only get like 1 month maybe of where like they even need it.
It could be worse.
Yeah.
I was in Switzerland a couple months ago and my friend there was telling me that it's actually illegal in Switzerland to have air conditioning.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Europeans are not big into that. And there's a reason why they have a lot of heat wave problems over there. So yeah. I'm just saying, count my blessings.
No, that's right.
What I do every single day.
So, Joel, why don't you tell me how you got kind of hooked up with the Boston blockchain? I mean, New Hampshire, you guys are kind of neighbors, but I think you guys in Massachusetts have a little bit of a friendly rivalry going.
Yeah, I would say so. It's, you know, sibling rivalry.
Yeah, we'll just say. Yeah, yeah. There's love in there.
Yeah, so I moved to New Hampshire about 12 years ago and in the process got kind of plugged in with the local crypto scene. People don't really know this, but the crypto movement sort of got its start in New Hampshire with a lot of the kind of more libertarian kind of elements. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a radio show out of Key, New Hampshire, Free Talk Live, was one of the first to be talking about Bitcoin in around 2010. Mm. After Gavin Andreessen, again, from Massachusetts, the heir of Satoshi Nakamoto's heir, who basically handed over keys to GitHub, et cetera, to him. He came up and was in studio in Free Talk Live and kind of introduced them all to Bitcoin and gave them some Bitcoin, like paid for his lunch in Bitcoin back when it was like 37 cents a coin or something like that. It was like incredibly low. And hearing about that from Free Talk Live, again, in New Hampshire, Roger Ver, who became known as Bitcoin Jesus after that, became one of the biggest first early figures in the crypto world. And he was the first angel investor in crypto companies. Basically, there was no crypto companies of any kind before him.
So before we get too far past this, you mentioned the guy paid for lunch with Bitcoin back when that wasn't really a thing. Like, how did he do that? There is no Bitcoin ATMs then. I don't think vendors are really taking it at that time.
I would assume, I mean, I wasn't there at the time, but what I would assume is he had some sort of a phone wallet or a mobile wallet or something and just paid someone back.
Not just reimbursed
like Venmoing you back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the Bitcoin ATM was invented in Manchester, New Hampshire. The library blockchain was launched out of there as well. You have like all kinds of the Porcupine Freedom Festival up in the mountains of Lancaster has been one of the few places where you've had almost universal crypto acceptance for over 10 years now, as far as you go to the festival can pay for everything in crypto. Huh. It's very kind of strong roots. I remember Vitalik Buterin hanging out at our meetups before he ended up getting into Ethereum back in his Bitcoin magazine days. Mm-hmm. Eric Voorhees of Shapeshift, Charlie Schrem, a bunch of those early figures all kind of involved in the scene. And Bruce Fenton of Bitcoin Foundation fame runs the Free State Digital Assets Conference now in New Hampshire.
Right.
So there's just a lot of
a lot of
history for for such a kind of small rural place, I would say.
All right. So did you move there to be closer to the scene, or did you just end up happening to luck into there when you left Arizona?
I would consider half and half. I knew about crypto a little bit, but wasn't really too into it yet. Mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to get closer to a lot of like the same kind of tech scene and Liberty scene and things like that. But also I just like New England a lot. I mean, you know, you know what it's like. It's good. It's nice. Yeah, life is good.
You can afford it.
It's kind of a hybrid.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, of course.
Right? Okay. So, I mean, we kind of hinted a little bit about using Bitcoin as an actual currency and using it to like pay for things and services. That's something that you guys do with Dash.org now, right? I mean, that's like the main goal of your guys' new company is to facilitate crypto transactions. Is that fair to say?
Well, pretty much. So Dash is a blockchain just like Bitcoin. It's its own thing and has been around for a little over 11 years at this point, kind of one of the older ones. And it's basically meant to fulfill that original vision of Bitcoin, but in a more, I guess, polished and targeted way, where Bitcoin was sort of like the prototype for digital cash. And somewhere around 2016, 2017, started to pivot to digital gold use case, basically not super usable for everyday payments.
Like inflation hedge, that's about the time when those arguments are coming out, right?
Yeah, and Dash kind of stayed focused on, instead of becoming less useful, they're becoming more useful in that direction, focusing more on, you know, privacy, instant transactions, high degree of usability, scalability, so everyone could kind of do it and keep low fees, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we've been kind of polishing that mission for the last 10, 11 years. And we're finally making some pretty good progress now.
So there's a few things that I want to kind of touch on with the Dash project. But I think one of the things that we talked about pre-call was for this is kind of maybe talking through like how you use crypto in your everyday life, because that's something that I struggle with. I look at crypto as more of like a way of investing. Like I look at it as like a store of value or to speculate on. But it sounds like you guys are actually more focused more on the currency side of things at Dash. So how do you work towards that goal without losing sight of, like, I guess, the other benefits that Bitcoin brought?
Yeah, of course. And I mean, this could be multi-layers of hours and hours long conversation diving into what is this new radical technology that we call cryptocurrency in general. It generally speaking, like, the reason for the stock mentality kind of thing is because up until, I would say, right about now, I mean, things are starting to change, but cryptocurrencies have been mostly like prototypes that people could buy and then expect to maybe not be a prototype at some point.
Right.
So the same thing with like most people who have bought Bitcoin have not bought it, I would guess, because of what they can do with it today, but they view it as a hedge against inflation. They view it as a hedge against the old financial system and central banking. They view it as the underpinning of a future. It's kind of like, this is going to be huge someday, so I might as well get some now kind of thing. And so that's most of what crypto's kind of been. And for sure, Dash had its own hype cycle in 2017 where the price went from, what, $10 in January to like $1,600 by the end of the year.
Oh, is it that high? I was looking at the price chart of it. I did see that spike. I didn't realize it got that high.
Yes, it was wild times, but like clearly have some sort of our own speculation there as well. But then it's the end of the day, all these are technologies. They're kind of living technologies, sort of like hybrid open source technologies and a business, if we're honest, because you need mining infrastructure for Bitcoin, for example. You need miners and masternodes for Dash to run things. And eventually, you got to have users. You got to have people using this for stuff.
Right.
And from the payments perspective, that's been something I got really interested in from the early days. That's what got me into Bitcoin. And when in the end of 2015, I decided to just stop accepting any fiat currency for money and only be paying in crypto. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier today. It was tougher back then, but decided to sort of run this experiment first with Bitcoin. It worked for a while, then it didn't. And then I switched to mostly Dash at the end of 2016. And especially in the couple last recent years, it's become easy to just use almost only Dash for everything.
Really?
So 2016, I closed my bank account. There's a long story behind that, but basically I've been living the experiment of trying to see if this technology works or when will it work. And I have to say, as of like today, it's much more feasible for average people than it was when I started, right. That's for sure.
So one of the best use cases I think that dawned on me when I was looking through your guys' website and seeing all the places that Dash is accepted was for overseas travel. Like that's the one that makes the most sense to me because you're skipping all of those conversion fees. What's the exchange rate? Like they ding you in both ways, right? They ding you on the exchange at 2 euros or wherever you're going. And then when you're coming back, how do those fees compare to like the gas fees and like the actual fees that comes with using crypto?
Well, it really depends on which crypto and how you do it. But in the case of Dash, and I would say other simpler payment coins, like maybe say like a Litecoin or a Bitcoin Cash or those kinds of things, you can get those per transaction fees down in like the low cents or fraction of a cent kind of range.
Good, good.
Where the amount of data required to transmit a move integer from A to B kind of thing is, it's not like a complex smart contract or anything. That's like a very low data load. It's pretty easy to just keep that very low. Mm-hmm. So I could pay, you know, someone in Japan, in Nigeria, in, you know, Lithuania, and they can have the money permanently settled on the Dash blockchain in like 2 seconds for about half a cent right now.
Right.
So when you look at it that way, that's something that has absolutely massive potential.
Yeah.
Now the challenge is kind of bridging all those things together where, you know, you make the connection of like, where can they actually use it over there? Do we have services and businesses set up so that you don't have to be like, okay, well now I'm going to go sell on some crypto exchange for like 4% or something. And then all those price gains are kind of lost at that point.
Yeah. God, half a cent though per transaction. Like that, I made a transaction, this is probably 2 years ago, using Bitcoin. I don't want to say which exchange, but it was one of the major ones. But I want to say like for a $110 purchase roughly, I think I paid like $30 in gas fees because I just didn't know what I was doing. I just clicked the button and like next thing I know, like, oh, damn.
Yeah. A couple of Christmases ago, a friend of mine spent $882 on a single Bitcoin transaction fee. And a lot of that, I mean, there's some technical specifics of why it was more expensive than usual, but
I think it has to do with like usage time, like if you're just doing it the wrong time of day, right?
Yeah, in this case, he picked the perfect time of day, which was on Christmas Day when the times are lower typically, but it's just that it's the way the UTXO system works with stuff like Bitcoin is basically you don't have a balance, you have coins. And if you take up, you receive a bunch of coins over the years, you have this big pile of coins. So it's going to be more difficult to unload thousands of dollars worth of Coinstar, you know, coins from small purchases. It's going to be more inconvenient than using a $100 bill. That's kind of the analogy there. So that made it more expensive. But also, Bitcoin does tend to be more expensive when it gets used a lot, when it's congested.
Right. So what about Dash? Has Dash solved that issue?
Yeah. So one of the, you mentioned kind of a master thing. There's an interesting element in Dash pioneered quite a few things. I think it was the first cryptocurrency with instant permanent settlement back in like 2014 or 15. Now you have some other coins that have like fast settlement I think Dash might've been the first, but then also the first decentralized autonomous organization starting at their DAO, starting in 2015. But the Masternode system, it's a separate set of nodes that run special functions on the network that you have to have a certain amount of coins.
I think it was pretty reasonable. When I looked it up, it said like 1,000 Dash.
Yes,
like
$1,000.
Yeah, that's pretty reasonable.
As of today, that's pretty reasonable. As of 2016, early 2017, that also is pretty reasonable. But then if you get into, you multiply that by 1,000, you got like $1 million masternode at the end of 2017. That was less reasonable.
Yes.
But generally speaking, in order to have that, you have that, and then the nodes are actually paid and incentivized to do things.
Is this similar to the way Ethereum's proof of staking, the way their nodes work?
I would say yes, except for a couple things. First of all, Ethereum is fully proof of stake, so you just have these validator nodes. Dash has a hybrid system, so you have miners as well, but then also masternodes, and they both work together. So it's kind of like a dual security system, kind of combining the best of both worlds, in my opinion, of course. But
Proof of stake, I didn't like when Ethereum switched to that because it just seemed like there's just too much benefits to being rich already with that system, right?
Yeah, I think it is, again, is I I have a personal podcast I do on the side, and I did a 4-hour long interview series just on proof of work versus proof of stake. So there's tons of material on this.
Can I link those?
Yeah, sure, if you want.
What's the name of the podcast? The
Digital Cash Network. It's my fun little side hobby I do to keep myself grounded and look outside the bubble of crypto, in crypto.
It's my way of getting socialization.
Yes, for sure. Sad, but true.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, Digital Cash Network. Make sure people check that out. I'll link that in the description there, the episode you referenced. So we don't have to spend all day talking about how that works.
Well, so basically just the way the masternode system figures into the question of like how you manage to keep things cheap and fast and things is the big reason for Bitcoin and then Ethereum kind of going the same direction a little bit of saying we can't expand the size of the capacity of the chain beyond a certain point, because then not everyone will be able to run their own node, and therefore, they're going to have to trust some other third party, like a company, when interacting with a blockchain, and we don't want that. And so, therefore, we have to keep it small enough so everyone could run their own node. Well, the good thing with the masternode system is the Dash network pays people to run nodes, so you don't have to trust a third party. It's the part of the network.
Right.
And so, you don't have that problem, and therefore, you can grow capacity as much as you want. And there's also a function called DAPI, or the decentralized API, that lets people not have to run a node at all and just interact with a network without having to trust a third-party service like Infura that powers MetaMask and other things like that, for example.
Okay, okay. You also have, looking at the website there, you have a system where you fund community projects in the ecosystem where people can vote up to 10% of their rewards on specific projects. Can you talk to me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so that comes with the DAO. So when you have a cryptocurrency, like say Bitcoin, and new coins are created, 100% of those new coins created go towards miners. Mm-hmm. In Dash, it's a, I believe it's at current like 20% to miners.
Okay.
And 60% to, just off the top of my head, because it did get adjusted over the years, 60% to masternodes. And then 20% is available for basically anything. Mm. And so it's meant for development funding. And this is another thing where, like, when you have a cryptocurrency, an open source software project, the way people do it these days is they have a big VC allocation of some kind, or where they raise millions and millions of dollars in exchange for some pre-sale, and then they have a full war chest. Or then you have kind of like the Bitcoin or the Litecoin or whatever kind of model where you have like a foundation, you try to get donations or people to pay developers to contribute to the ecosystem. And the problem with, I guess, both of those systems, or the drawback, is you kind of are at the mercy of someone else to pay for your development.
Right.
Where you either have to make VC promises, or you have to just, you know, what if some big ETF company wants to donate to development, but then all their developers decide they want to engineer things that make the ETF, you know, that maybe don't serve everyone else's purposes, serve that.
You lose a lot of your control over your project when you allow other people to fund it.
Yeah, absolutely. So being funded right from the block reward is something that's kind of a unique feature of Dash. I don't think very many other projects do that. So every month, at the end of the month, there's something called a super block. So when you look at the coin supply, there's like a little heartbeat pattern. And that's whoever says, I want to get paid. Mm-hmm. And they just submit a proposal to the network. The masternodes vote on the proposals over the course of the month. And at the end of the month, whoever's in the running tally for winning just gets automatically paid out from new coins.
Dude, that's amazing. So,
yeah, I think it's pretty cool. Like, it's a lot of current DAOs that tend to deal with a current pot of money. Mm-hmm. But Dash doesn't have any such pot of money. It just automatically gets created as things go along. And so it's a little bit less of a thing that can be kind of like attacked and like taken over in some way. It's more just like a consistent, you know, paying. Just like everything you need gets paid from the block reward, basically.
Not only is it like robustly protected from outside influences, but it also kind of is protected from inside influences. You don't really get any say on where this money goes to unless you have a node to it and are voting, right? Like you as the or the CEO of the company, he doesn't get to just override any of those decisions, does he?
Yeah, exactly. And Dash's founder kind of retired in like 2017 or so. And then there was someone else who's running the core development team that did a lot of the development, who ended up being sort of removed by a DAO vote in 2022. And it's kind of like, it's a case where you see it all the time with companies where the CEO does something sketchy and then the board decides to get rid of him or whatever.
Right.
And it's kind of a similar type of a thing, except it's built into the protocol where you can't, you can't decide not to go along with a vote. You can't,
right.
There's no shenanigans. It just, it is what it is. And because you can have anyone can acquire 1,000 units of Dash, run a masternode, start voting. You don't really have control over who gets to make those decisions. It's just anyone can. And so it tends to be a lot more of an accountable system that way.
Yeah. Dude, I love it, man. I mean, is anybody copying you yet? Because it seems like the type of model we should be moving towards.
I think there have been a couple forks of Dash that have copied in that way. I obviously don't quote me on it, but I think PIVX has a very similar model because they forked the code from Dash. Mm-hmm. And Decred is not a Dash fork, but does have a similar kind of a system, although their treasury wasn't really decentralized until like a year or so ago or relatively recently. But as far as I know, they have the same kind of a basic setup.
Right. So what are you planning on discussing at Boston Blockchain? Have you figured out what you're participating in? Are you going to be in like a panel? Are you going to give a talk?
Yeah, I mean, I would say TBD as far as the actual specifics, but my bread and butter is, crypto is a replacement for the old monetary and payment systems, and it's a Dash specialty as well. So one thing a lot of people don't necessarily know is that you can use crypto for money today in much of the world, and in a 50 to 80% or maybe even more replacement for whatever you use your bank for.
Would you say it's been more adopted by the rest of the world than in the US?
That's always a challenging, that's tough to answer, I would say. I would say in places like Latin America in particular, it's being adopted a lot more for, like, you see it a lot more as far as like being used in a day-to-day type basis.
Was it Colombia or one of those that like actually adopted it as their like official currency?
Yeah, El Salvador.
El Salvador.
Yeah, and Venezuela had a very strong presence as well.
Yeah.
And at the end of somewhere in 2018, 2019, there was a very strong Dash presence in Venezuela. I believe about 3,000 different merchants accepted Dash in the Caracas area at that point. And if you go down memory lane, there's a lot of materials on that. As far as I know, still most of the major supermarkets in the country, for example, accept it. So it's... In that sense, the U.S. is definitely behind.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen any options at the local supermarkets.
Yes. Infrastructurally, the U.S. is still pretty close to the top as far as you have exchanges that's easy to find liquidity for some of these assets. There's payment tools. There's a lot of development team out of the U.S. Like, you, as far as that's concerned, the U.S. is kind of like top.
Right.
And I think maybe we'll see the U.S. get more up to speed with the rest after these last pieces of crypto legislation become law. I know like the Genius Stablecoin Act, and then the Clarity Act kind of do a lot to that. A lot of crypto companies are worried about going to jail for, building the wrong tech, and that keeps you out of the US. So once those things get figured out, I think we might see, especially if we get a de minimis tax exemption for like small payments, you don't have to report taxes on buying your coffee kind of thing.
Right.
I think that that'll really cause the U.S. to take its place back.
Is that being discussed now, hopefully?
Yes, it's been discussed for a few years. I know I heard the White House press secretary talking about it a few weeks ago. It's been bandied about in a few different bills. I don't know if there's a bill that's currently going through that has it, but I think there's a good chance it will happen in the next year or so.
So this year's theme at Boston Blockchain is AI and blockchain. So other things we kind of talked about is some of the cool stuff that your lead programmer has been doing, utilizing AI for some of these projects that your guys are doing over at Dash. Is there something to that maybe you can speak to, telling us like how that's getting incorporated?
Yeah, so AI is, like, obviously everyone's talking about it. It's the thing du jour. On a general kind of big picture, first, I think that that's going to be one of those biggest divides, is between companies and projects and individuals even who fully embrace AI in every aspect of their lives and learn how to really use it, and those who just kind of either have a token presence here or there, or they just don't see the value. They do everything old school. The technology has gotten to an amazing spot today. The people will catch up to using it all. It will take 5, maybe even 10 years. It'll take a long time for everyone to get on board. But the productivity lost from doing that is going to be just astronomical. So, for example, in myself with like the business and marketing kind of side of things, been working with some advertisers to do some like ad campaigns, and for graphics for that, obviously. Working with a designer, instead of just like paying a big firm to do like, you know, spend so much money, I can for a like 10, 20 cents maybe throw out a few Midjourney prompts and get something really cool looking, and then just say, hey, can you take this and just add a few things here and there? And then for a very small bill, you just get like an amazing graphic work.
Right.
And then
right.
not to mention like content creation, all that kind of stuff.
You mentioned podcasting. Are you using it for your episode descriptions yet? Because
yes,
man, you just punch in a transcript. Once you get that voice the way you like it, that makes everything so much easier.
Yes. And so it's easy to have like a professional team kind of feeling of content and everything else just with, you know, a few easy tools. Now, as far as like the coding side of things, which this is where I'm not, you know, I'm not a vibe coder, unfortunately. You know, wish I could be. But over time, like when you're building very big and complicated systems, you're just so much expertise and so much work and things that you just, it's hard to kind of replicate. And I would say the lead Dash developer currently is kind of a bit of a genius, and he's built some very interesting things. So Dash has two blockchains. It has the main blockchain, which is a Bitcoin-based. It's very similar to Bitcoin structure. It's a UTXO blockchain, and it's with the binding and the masternodes, et cetera, and the primarily written in C++, right? The old ways, right? But then there's another blockchain that handles a lot of data transactions that it's what you could call like an enshrined sidechain, although technical terms get a little fuzzy sometimes, but that's an account-based chain, loosely Cosmos-based, kind of similar to Cosmos-style consensus, mostly written in Rust. And a lot of our apps end up using both of these chains in tandem, and so they're two very different blockchain systems interacting together in under the same thing. And there is a little bit of background complexity in trying to figure out the best way of doing that, especially writing development tools, SDKs, all that. All that being said, because of the advancements that have been kind of implemented in the AI coding world, a very big, like I've noticed this myself, and I've also seen it reported that like the size of the Dash development team has contracted just a little bit over the last couple of years or so, not significantly, but it's got a little bit smaller, but the productivity has been like several fold. Like it used to be waiting on a new feature or a new thing for a few weeks or months or whatever. And now it's like, there's new surprises popping up everywhere. And basically it's something that I think that we're having to get used to as a, you know, as a world, right? As far as to fully merge with these kinds of AI tools, not just be like, I use them, but to use them to produce custom workflows on how to then use them. Yeah. Because you can't just say, build me an app, build me a library, build me an SDK. You can't just do that. It doesn't work out super well. You have to know exactly how the kinds of prompts, the kind of parameters, other things like that. And it's really hard if you don't have a good, for in the case of coding, right? A good programmer's mindset.
To know exactly
what to ask for and what not to ask for. And so basically a lot of the focus has been on in the last few weeks on building out these development flows for AI tooling. And now we're seeing some progress on some apps in particular that we haven't really seen in like a long time, just happening very quickly. And then all like the developer tooling, which has been sort of something that we've been like, okay, that's next on the agenda. Let's just add that in. And all of a sudden you got a really good working SDK. Oh, wow. Right. These things are starting to come out.
It's like it's a fast forward button. It just speeds everything up. Yes. You can really embrace it. Yeah.
Some of this is, you know, I think a lot of it is when you have like a relatively small team, like the Dash team has just been focused on delivering big results, but hasn't really, you know, has had maybe limited development resources for the last few years, but it's just kind of rather than just say, all right, we're going to focus in on making smaller improvements. Rather than that, it's just been like, well, how can we get the bigger improvements? And so then I do think it's going to be one of the first, I don't know how common this is, but it's going to be pretty heavily AI driven in the future. And I guess we're going to see how well that works out. It seems to be working out very well so far. And it could be that where you have this, again, small team doing the output of and quality output, not just, right, you know, random things, but quality output of some larger VC funded kind of teams that have, you know, spent a lot of time, sold their souls for tons of money for tons of developers, right, and all those human coordination problems that kind of introduces. And kind of the last little ramble on that is, when you're talking about, obviously, technology is complicated, but running a tech organization is very complicated too, because you could have so many people who are technical geniuses working on so many different things, coordinating them, motivating them. All the management aspects are really, you know, challenging, especially for the kinds of people who are technical geniuses.
Oh, God, yeah. Those guys are, it's like herding cats.
Yes. It's like, there's a reason why the Elon Musks of the world are sort of unicorns, people who have a high degree of technical competence, but also have a high degree of interpersonal motivational skills, let's just say, right, or management skills. And so what people don't necessarily understand yet is that AI agents are basically automated employees, and you can learn to become a top-level manager of these things and have just endless productivity, where instead of like the complexities of HR and management and all these other things that just like add all this extra like overhead in running an organization, you get to sort of sidestep some of that. Obviously, you're still working with people, and there's still more than, you can't do everything yourself and a few AI agents. You have to have a team of some kind.
Yes.
But it's still like a much, like the amount of efficiency you can gain from that could be astronomical. And I kind of feel like the Dash teams are sort of on the cutting edge of this. And so, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Dude, I love that. I mean, that's such a great way of explaining it. Like, yeah, I'm an AI manager, and AI is basically just like a force multiplier. Like, it takes my productivity and just multiplies it by whatever factor my competence level with AI is, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Joel, man, this has been eye-opening. This has been fascinating. I'm really glad that we got the time to talk. One last time, where people can go to check out the projects, is dash.org.
Yes, dash.org would be the site. Dash Pay on X, post a lot of fun stuff on that. And we have weekly spaces, which are pretty fun to join too.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yes.
All right.
Every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern.
Okay. Make sure you guys are checking that out. Joel, I can't wait to see you guys at Boston Blockchain. Hopefully, I won't be doing an interview and be able to catch your guys' presentation.
Absolutely.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, thanks very much.
Big thanks to Joel Valenzuela for breaking down Dash's digital cash vision and AI's role in crypto innovation. You can head over to dash.org to learn more about Dash. You can keep up with @DashPay on Twitter for news and Thursday spaces at 1 p.m. Eastern. And don't miss Boston Blockchain Week this September. You can snag your tickets at bostonblockchainweek.com for the talks, networking, and that signature blockchain energy. Follow the show, share it with your crypto crew, and we'll catch you all in the next episode. Produced by China Shop Productions.